The Burning, Some Reflections Between Kamloops and Valemont, British Columbia, by Chris Kinman, read by Arden Henley. Dead tree standing, sunned and whipped dry, firewood lichen curls kindle. Cecily Nicholson. How can we dance when our earth is turning? How do we sleep while our beds are burning? Midnight Oil. A question. What happens to the rhizome world when this forest goes up in flames? I leave the hotel in Kamloops early morning, heading north and east towards Valemont, about 3.5 hours of driving. The road is wet from overnight showers, but the sky is clearing. The sun, here and there, breaks through. I follow the North Thompson River, which downstream, behind me, joins the Thompson and later becomes part of the Fraser. The name, North Thompson, is a remnant of early colonial days, but the river, it flows and it has for generations. No dams, few dikes. We follow upriver, a steady, easy drive, a joy of a drive. About 44 to 45 minutes into the trip, we approach the town of Barriere. The land has transitioned from the dry, desert-like country around Kamloops into sparse, ponderous pine forests. These forests in turn transform into a terrain deeply scarred from previous years' forest fires. Dead burned trees still standing upright, surrounded in a rather ironic manner by the lush green grasses and undergrowth that only a spring burn site can offer. A couple of memories return to me as I pass through these burns, both memories of fire. The first memory. A few years ago, I was driving north and east from the Fraser Valley to the community of Lillooet. Once through the Fraser Canyon at Lytton, I crossed over the clear waters of the Thompson River just before she enters the muddy Fraser. On the other side of the bridge, I was on Lytton First Nations territory. This was early spring. The sun had recently melted, and there were men from the community purposely burning the dry grasses around their homes and community. Because there was still moisture in the soil from the winter snows, the surface grasses burned, but the pines and other trees remained unscathed. I had heard rumors before about how, traditionally, the first peoples of the interior of what is now called British Columbia used prescribed burns to protect their communities from the scorching fires that often moved over the land through the summer seasons. Fire, a respected friend and foe. It was necessary for the people here at Lytton First Nation to work with fire in the springtime, to understand it and honor it as integral to the land itself, to make sure that they were working on the fire's side and not operating against her. It was particularly important to establish relations with the fire after the snows had left, when she was amenable to being worked with, rather than waiting for the summer droughts when the fires would simply rage through, caring nothing for human well-being and planning. Sophisticated relations with the land and with fire were evident upon the land of the Lytton First Nations. The second memory. A few years ago, my father's home in Abbotsford, B.C., was being shut down in preparation for him moving to a nursing home. I had the bittersweet job of going through the large book collection that he and my mother had collected through the decades. In the midst of this collection, I found a small chapbook about the history of my childhood hometown of Melfort, Saskatchewan. I took it home with me. Within that book, the story is told of the colonization of the Melfort area. The author describes how, prior to the intrusions of colonization, there were small woodlots dotting the prairies in this area. These woodlots were filled with old-growth timber, trees that could not have been 100 years, could have been 100 years old. The Cree, who had traditionally been living upon this land and had been harvesting those woodlots for generations, were then removed. The settlers came and occupied the land, transforming it into wheat-based farmland. However, after only a few years of the settlers' occupation, great fires passed through, burning everything in their way, including the grasses, the settlers' homes and farms, and the woodlots that had held the old-growth trees. The book tells the story of an old Cree elder who told the author how, when they had been responsible for these lands, every spring, while the snow was still in the woodlots, but surrounding grasses were drying out, they would purposely burn around the woodlots, consuming the flammable grasses and tinder. Because of the snow still in the woodlots, the fire stayed away from the trees. This ensured that, when the fires came through in the heat of the summer, there would be no fuel for them around the woodlots, and the fires would be forced to pass by. The Cree people had clearly been actively involved in holding the integrity of these landscapes together through time. They were not simply people who roamed over the land, just passing through. No, they were involved in sculpting the land that they moved upon. When they were removed, the land as it had been known was forever changed. This brings home what a Stalus elder recently said to me. The land and the people are one. Such words are not just a statement of truth, but a calling that must be lived up to. Back to my trip from Kamloops to Valemont. This land I am traveling upon, I am unfamiliar with it. I haven't traveled upon it before, and I do not know its histories very well. I do not know the indigenous connections to this place, other than a small amount that I had been able to read. But I am certain that these lands that look so wild and free were also formed, molded, and held by the peoples who, for innumerable generations, lived with and upon these lands and waters. I think of how often we all travel upon land without knowing even its simplest of histories. There is much to learn. A continuing journey. Somewhere just south of Valemont, I leave the watershed of the North Thompson Valley. The streams that I drive over now no longer enter the North Thompson. Rather, they all go northward, directly into the Fraser herself. Just outside of Valemont, the Fraser and I reacquaint ourselves. The river here is a young and vigorous flow. Tomorrow, I follow her to the headwaters and beyond. I began this section with a question. What happens with the rhizome relations? That is, networks of trees, plants, and creatures, when this forest goes up in flames. Well, we could limit ourselves to a story of destruction, an accelerated destruction for which we and our ancestors who came before us clearly have some responsibility. We can enter a process of lamentation, which is a tried and true biblical tradition, but we can also carefully attend to the land and witness and encourage the rhizome's organic return. I remember that intense spring growth around the charcoal trees in the burn near Barriere for rhizome's return. We discover this rhizome in new ways, for new sets of relations come to life. New plants, successions of plants beginning with fireweed and then moving into new aspen growths. Both fireweed and aspens are rhizomes. New fungi, the morels, arrive the first spring after a fire season. New assemblages of people and creatures and land together, coming together, finding renewed and creative relations that can sustain and give a future. In this, perhaps not a large part of our task in today's scorched world, to discover and enter into the new and vigorous rhizome worlds, both worlds that we sometimes call natural and other times call human, coming alive around us.